Okay, so
let's review. And who are we talking about?
I don't even know.
I don't think I've been here in a while.
Me neither. I don't know why. We'll ask if we're still learning about the Narnia book.
That has been a while.
We're learning about Peter.
That's right. We are learning about Peter, but specifically...
I love Peter.
Peter 1. Peter
what,
Simon Peter.
First Peter, yeah.
What do we call... What is that?
The rock.
Yes, but what is First Peter?
Going to Peter.
Oh, Peter's letter.
All right, Peter's letter. Okay, and who was Peter?
Peter was
Jesus' friend.
Apostle.
He was an apostle.
He should have died.
And he wrote an epistle, right?
This is just
that what
bad.
You call it?
Yes.
Sorry.
This one's bad too, but that's all right. He was a fisherman, right? That was his profession.
Well, he fished men.
Later, yes.
Later.
That's right. So, and tell me some more stuff about Peter.
Peter...
What do you know about this? Okay.
We know that.
His wife had a mother?
Yes. Like everybody. What else?
They went and ate at his mother's house or something one time.
Yep.
His wife's mother's house.
Tell me about his character.
I remember, but I don't at the same time.
Okay.
Passion is a good word.
Passionate.
Wasn't he like strong-willed or something?
That's what passionate.
Well,
not necessarily.
Like, I don't know.
What's the word that we usually tie to him?
Oh,
that's all these things.
Rock.
Yes, but that's not really. It doesn't really describe his character.
You said it's a word that Levi would use, and I can't remember it.
Yes. Impetuous. All right.
Tintinabulation?
Yeah.
Tintinabulation develops.
So, what did we first learn about Peter in his first letter? Or in the first chapter of his first letter? I know, that's like 5 weeks ago. What was the first thing that we learned about from Peter's life in the first chapter of 1 Peter?
Does this wrong? Take place after the death of Jesus, right?
Yes. Right. So, what is Peter drawing from to write this letter? His experiences, right. Okay. So, he talked about, what did he go through a lot? What were his experiences like?
Trials and tribulations.
Okay, yes, he talked about those, and what did he say about trials and tribulations?
He said, you can do it. You can get through, you gotta
work.
You
have to have them to make the good stuff better.
Oh.
Yes. What did they do to you, Audrey? Okay. What else do they do? What does going through something hard do to you, Chad?
Teaches you a lesson.
Okay. Teaches you a lesson, and hopefully you do what?
Learn from it.
And change, right? Okay. So, what does Peter say that you... What should your attitude be about hard things in your life? What should your attitude be about that? Yes. More than that, though. What? Yes, but more than that. Huh? Yes, but more than that. What'd you say? Oh. What would be more than thankful? Like, if you could be thankful for something, glad that it happened. Exuberance better, that's good.
You should be excited.
Excited's good too.
That's even less than thankful.
Well, not necessarily. He said that you should be glad for them. You should be happy when you go through something hard, because that's going to bring you closer to God, to change your relationship, make it better with Him. Okay? So that's a different attitude to have about hard things in life, right? Or not. It's pretty different, right? Okay. So then we talked about something else in chapter 2. We talked about some coins in a fish's mouth, right? Anybody remember that? So can anybody remember the story? Because this is something that happened to Peter. Why? So why did he need to find coins in a fish's mouth?
Did he have to pay taxes?
Yes, he had to pay taxes. Did he want to pay those taxes?
No.
No. But what did Jesus say to him?
Give Caesar what is due Caesar.
He did say that, but not in this situation.
Pay your taxes. Probably not the other side of the
boat. No, not that one.
Go to the dock the first fish that you catch, you'll find
your tax money.
Yes, exactly. And he said, and take that money and go pay it to the tax collector, or to the guy who's collecting. Basically, he's collecting a toll for going on a road or coming into a city. That's what he was doing. So, what did Peter learn from that situation?
That God will provide. Because how do you know that fish was the right one?
Yep. Okay, so that's part of the lesson. But what's the other part of it? Because Peter really didn't talk about that part of it in his letter, that God was going to provide. He talked about the other half of the lesson. Who's he paying the money to?
Caesar.
To Rome, right?
It was respect those who are higher than you.
Yes, respect those that are in authority over you. Respect the laws, and you're to obey them. Were the Romans nice people?
No. Not necessarily.
They were.
Unless you were a Roman.
Depends on which story.
That's
unless
true.
They were just for themselves.
Pretty
yeah, pretty much in general and in the world at this time, if you weren't a Roman citizen, they weren't very nice to you. Okay?
I mean, as much as they taxes and don't cause uprisings, they don't care.
Yes, but it does kind of stink when they keep jacking up the prices of the taxes so then they can go fight in a war halfway around the world, your world. And it doesn't even matter to you, right? So they're not somebody that you would want to obey or do what they say. They might not have your best interest in mind. But Peter says, we are called, we are ordered to obey those in authority over us. Why? Because it's one thing to know the rule and know what God says to do and to just do it, which is a good thing. But why? What's the end result of that?
It's how it should be.
Who's watching you?
God
is watching you, but
everybody else. Like, you have to set an example.
Right.
You're the person who's spreading for the church.
That's right. You are an example, okay? So that's an important part about following the laws, doing what's right, because Peter says that if you do what's right, that those who are against you, those who were against you, and were even your enemy, they will one day testify at judgment that you did the right thing. That's pretty satisfying. I don't know. I think it is. But let's see. So then last week, what did you talk about? Those of you who were here. Did you talk about goats?
Yeah.
Or sheep?
Yeah.
That
What did they do?
Submitted to each other or didn't die.
Oh, wait, the sheep on the bridge?
Yes.
Oh, I know this story. Okay. I wasn't here, but I know the story.
Well, you should. I mean, you've probably heard it half a dozen times.
Levi taught it to me.
Good.
That when you were up, you take to cross the bridge, you one needed to lay down so one could go over. But neither one most likely didn't want to cross because of pride, reputation, something of that sort. And
right.
Sometimes that you have to put that and let people over you and...
Right. Do something, submit yourself to somebody because for the better good of the relationship, right? Okay, so what? How are you going to apply that? What was he talking about? What was he drawing from of his experiences in life?
His wife.
Right, because he was married, right? He's really the only apostle that you can say, yes, he was married. The only one that we know for sure. So, what does that have to do with the goats?
He was very humbled eventually by his wife.
By what about his wife?
Because she treated him with... She held her tongue and she treated him with... she submitted like she was supposed to him.
Okay.
Which was more powerful than not submitting.
Right, right. Because it says a lot more because... There's a specific word, and that was the same word that we looked at when we were talking about the laws and submitting to authority as well. Starts with a C.
Compromise.
Nope.
Cooperation.
Nope. Now, this is a word that you would not normally use to describe what it is. It's one that's used often in the Bible because it's Old English. Conversation. Do you remember what that meant in the Bible when it says that people will know you by your conversation?
Reputation.
Your actions.
Your actions, right? It's not just about what you say, but it's about how you live, what you do in your life, what your priorities are. Every little facial expression that you do is part of it. Okay? It says a lot. It says a lot in your life how you react to things, even when you don't say something. So he's saying he learned that from his wife's conversation, how she acted and what she did in their relationship. And that they learned together that sometimes you have to swallow your pride and submit to whatever it might be. Okay. And in the end, it comes down to respecting one another. And that doesn't just mean in a marriage, but it means in all of your relationships that you should respect the other person. All right, so we're going to go on to chapter 4 tonight of 1 Peter. And we're going to start off with just the first verse before we get going. Sure. Whenever you're ready. Yep, chapter 4, verse 1.
For as much then as Christ hath suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind, for he that hath suffered in the flesh hath ceased from sin, that he no longer
should that's good.
Only the first one.
Just the first verse. All right. So what does that verse mean, that first verse? Might take a little bit of dissecting to take a look at it.
Christ suffered for us. That's the first part.
Okay. We got that. So Christ suffered, which I hope that that's clear in everybody's mind as it's right after Easter, okay? And
you should have the same like mindset because you should arm yourself.
Okay.
Same.
Mindset. So what mindset?
The mindset of that you should.
And what mindset was that?
You have to go through tribulations.
And accept.
You have to submit to everyone and lay down your pride completely.
Okay, yes, he did do that. But Peter's getting at something else here. Something very, that's very applicable, very tangible. You can feel it in our world. Okay, because he talks about the suffering in the flesh, right? What's the flesh?
Your sinful temptations.
Your body, all right? This physical world that you have, yes, it often does refer to temptations, which is why Jason went there, because usually when they talk about the flesh, they're talking about your body and your living in this world, your natural tendencies towards things. And it says that Jesus suffered in the flesh. He chose to suffer, to come down and be a human, and to suffer in the flesh. Okay? And Peter says you need to have that same mindset. Now, he's going to tell you a little bit more, because it's not very clear that exactly what he means yet by suffering in the flesh. Okay? But then he says, explains why you're going to suffer when you do something. And what is that in the second part of the verse?
That if you suffer, you stop sin.
Well, let's reverse it the other way. Let's reverse that logical statement that he put in here. That if you stop sinning, you are going to what?
Suffer.
You're going to suffer in the flesh if you do not sin. What does that mean?
It means what it says. It means in the flesh, but not the spirit.
Okay, so your spirit's not going to suffer, right? That's a good point.
It's
going
to be hard for you, and you are going to have a lot of temptations.
Okay, right. It's referring to temptations and to struggling with what your inside of you wants to do. In the moment, it's referring to all types of lust, whether it's fleshly lust or whether it's greed and wanting something right now, right away. That's what it's talking about. That's one of those types of things that you would suffer in the flesh. So, essentially, what he's saying is that if you stop sinning, it's going to hurt. Did you ever think about it that way before?
No.
It's kind of a different way to think about it. But he's right about it. But it's a different way to approach it. And you probably didn't ever think that, that you were doing it wrong before, and that it hurt to do it right because you were doing it wrong. Right? So it's a strange concept, right, that he's putting out there right now. And let's think about it like this. If you want to have really nice, juicy, fresh tomatoes, what do you probably need to do? Yes, those are important.
You should probably just plant them yourself.
Right, you should probably grow it yourself. That's usually a thing. I mean, you could pay somebody to, but in general, you're going to need to, somebody's going to have to do the work of growing it, right? So let's just say you're doing the work. Eli's right, fertilizing is always important, that helps. But what do you have to do before you can fertilize, or while you fertilize?
Get the ground ready. Got
roots. Make sure the corn tiller runs.
Yep.
Break it a couple times, fix it, and do it again.
Yeah, there's usually more steps than you anticipate in growing something. And then after it's already planted, what do you have to do? And
water.
The part that nobody likes.
Oh, you have to weed.
You have to weed it.
Well,
yes, that would be another thing that you could do, but you're always gonna fight with weeds. Or you could put plastic down. You know, that works too.
Mulch in plastic and
But those are benefits of our modern age that we have. But in the end, you're doing work because you had to go buy the mulch, so you had to work to get it. So it's going to cost you in the end. So let's somebody, or a few of you, we'll all turn to Genesis chapter 3, verse 17. Just to show you that all this stuff ties together. And then I'm not just pulling stuff out of thin air.
Repeat what you said.
Genesis chapter 3, verse 17 to 19. Eli, if you could start with verse 17.
And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life.
Well, thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the herb of the field.
In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread till you return unto the ground, for out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return.
Okay, so this is after Adam and Eve sinned. Sin came into the world, changed the nature of the world, and now this is the new nature. It's cursed now, and from now on, pretty much, if you want to eat, if you want to live, you're going to have to suffer. You're going to have to suffer with weeds, you're going to have to sweat for anything that you want, you're going to have to put the work in, and sometimes that's going to make you sad, how hard you have to work for how little you get. It's true. If you haven't felt that way yet, it will happen at some point in your life. Going out and getting a job and becoming an adult is not happy all the time. It won't be. So, it's just in the nature of our world that there's going to be suffering. Now, that's just talking about the physical world, though. It's just one aspect there. So let's go a step further, because if you think about, we have our physical world. Okay, that's Earth, the universe, anything that you can measure, that you can look at scientifically out there, that's the physical stuff. But then, if we zoom out farther than we can conceptualize, then you have the spiritual world. And that spiritual world goes in and through and all around everything that's physical. It's there all the time. So let's picture then, now that we have it set, that the physical and the spiritual are both existing, and things that happen in the physical world can affect things in the spiritual world and vice versa. Okay? So let's picture that you have two tables. Okay? Alright, and then you got a little stool at each table. And there's a guy sitting at each table. Okay? And this is a table set for dinner. Alright? Got your silverware, your plate, your cup, you know, all that kind of stuff. Ready to go. But there's no food on the table. Both of these people are you. Alright? One of them is the physical you. The other one is the spiritual you. Alright? Then this is also you. It's not confusing enough. And this is you bringing in a big platter of all sorts of food.
Oh. To both
feed. You get to choose both which one to feed.
Yes.
You gotta feed one of them.
You can feed, but here's the thing. Which one do you need to feed?
You need to feed both, don't you?
Food? What?
Just in the general term of feed, which one do you need to feed?
You should feed both.
You should feed both, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So split it.
Your spirit.
No, but you should.
You just said.
If
you have three quarters, you should feed both.
You should feed your spirit.
If you
spirit,
don't feed the physical one, you die.
But the physical one is talking more about, like, your temptations and that kind of stuff. And the other one is your spiritual soul, and you have to.
Give three quarters to your spirit and give one quarter to your physical, so you don't die.
Jason, what do you have to say about it? What were you saying?
I was thinking that because Jesus said, you can't live on bread alone, but by every word that comes out of the mouth of God.
Right.
So if you just feed the spiritual one, your physical will be fed because God will take care of it. Because, you know, Jesus talking about foxholes and stuff, and even that place to live.
Right.
I feel like you just have to pay attention to the spiritual, and then that will help you do the physical by a couple.
Okay.
Good words.
All very good things that Jason just said. But let me ask you this, Jason. Does that mean that you shouldn't get a job?
No.
Does that mean that you can just have a special room where you sit in and all that you do is pray?
No.
No. Okay. Why not?
Because you live for God. You live your physical life for others. For God.
You have to do something, right, with your life.
Yeah.
You have to do something with it.
You have to eat.
Okay. This is true. All right, right? What else does the Bible say that's on Evan's side, right, over here? You got to have something to back it up.
It says you cannot live on bread alone, which means bread alone is a no-no. But you do need some bread.
Let me help you out. You got a better argument than that. He that does not work shall not eat. The Bible says that, right? All right?
Okay.
If you don't work, you're not going to eat unless somebody has charity on you. But anyways, an important thing that Jason pointed out is focus. What is your focus on? His focus
should be on the spiritual guy.
That doesn't mean that he's not going to do the work that he has to do to make sure that he's not maybe a burden to somebody else. What if you just expected everybody else in your family to take care of all your financial stuff? Because you're like, sorry, can't work because I'm focused on God. Just something to think about, okay? So, but what Peter is talking about is he says, what is your focus on? Is your focus on spiritual things? Is your focus on God? Is your focus on what you can do for God? Or are you so concerned about where your next entertainment is going to come from? Or are you so concerned about every day that your career is the most important thing to you? Or is the most important thing to you your family? Sometimes that can be somebody's idol sometimes. They put their family before God. It does happen sometimes. So there's all sorts of things that you can put ahead. But Peter is saying, if you are focused on God, if you're focused on his spiritual things, it's going to hurt you sometimes if you're doing it the way you should. It's going to hurt because your temptations, where you're naturally drawn to, is going to say, feed me, feed me, feed me. I want to just, I don't know, maybe it's just, I want to go to the movies 3 times a week because I just love movies. Movies are my favorite thing. Marvel movies, DC movies. Movies are what I'm all about. If that's what you're more focused on, he said, it's not going to hurt you physically. It'll hurt you spiritually, but that's harder to know. It's harder to feel that in this world that we live in. It's using your eyes, using all your sense, well, most of your senses, if, unless it's a 4D theater. But Peter is focused here on the spiritual things. And we'll get to where he draws this from, this example. Okay? Let's move on and look at verse 2 through 4 back in Peter chapter 4. And he's going to explain more of why you can't have both.
That he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh of the lust of men, but to the will of God.
For you have spent enough time in the past doing what pagans choose to do, living in debauchery, lust, drunkenness, carousing, and detestable idolatry.
Wherein they think it strange that you run out with them to the same excess of rites that you will do.
Okay. So, if you decide that the things of the world are not what you focus on, people will notice. People are going to notice that you put whatever you're doing for God first. Whether you are something that people traditionally see as being dedicating your life for Christ, like being a missionary to another country, or to maybe an inner city mission or something like that. Though that's something traditional that people see. But sometimes it takes longer for them to see other things that you do in your life. Maybe they see that you spend a lot of time at your church. That you might say, oh, I'd love to go do that with you, but that's on Tuesday night and I go to Bible study Tuesday night. That tells people, that must be important to them. Something about that is important to them because they'd rather go do that. Or even if they'd rather not go do that, they know that they should go do that instead. Whatever it might be, maybe it's because maybe you volunteer your time doing something else. Could even be outside of the church. But spiritually focused. Focused on the things that last. And people will notice that. And Peter mentions in verse 3 things that you probably, some of these you think, well, I would never do that. Those are things that I already am like, whoa, I'm not ever going to do that. That's not what I'm about. I wouldn't do that anyways. And then there are other things that are okay that could still be a temptation or could become something that is draws your focus away. Things that are appropriate at certain times and in certain amounts can become something that can be something that you lust after. I mean, just as simple as, let's say that you like, your hobby is hunting. Let's just say that. And you like to hunt, but slowly it becomes what you do all the time. And then you say, well, if I just went out one more time, I might get that one, whatever, that's one that I've been after this whole year. I don't know, that turkey I've been after all year. That's the one. And if I just went out maybe on Sunday, or maybe if I went out, it might cut into my reading time or my prayer time or whatever it might be. That's okay though, just for this week. That's how those things can slowly creep in and become more important in your life and change what your focus is. But when you make the decision to put God first with things, people will see that example. Just to tie back to what we talked about earlier when Peter was talking about submission to authority, if you remember, I told you about my work in the military, and then when I left, that they mentioned about me doing work with the church. And I never really talked to them about it at all. I didn't talk about that much at work unless people mentioned it. But I would sometimes ask if I could leave early for things. Or I would mention that I could stay later on another day. Or I would ask for certain time off for certain things. And I didn't even realize that people were noticing it, but they noticed what I was focused on, that was an important part of my life. There's lots of people that we never talked about spiritual things. But suddenly I realized that they noticed it anyways. You just don't know what other people are watching in your life. And those little things, even though you're not there telling them that you're a Christian and trying to explain to them all the doctrine about what you believe, they're watching you and they're seeing that there is something there. And that's powerful. All right, let's look at verses 5 through 7 now. See where he goes now. I think so.
Who shall give account to him that is ready to judge the quick and the dead?
For this cause was the gospel preached also to them that are dead, that they might be judged according to men in the flesh, but live according to God in the Spirit.
For the end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be serious and watchful in your prayers.
Okay. So, the point here that he's making is that one day that we're all going to be judged, and that Jesus is coming back, and that he... And that no one knows when, right? Anybody know what the parable, real short parable, for how Jesus is going to return? You might not think of it as a parable, but it's a short sentence. Yes, he will, but it's more about the timing that the parable is. Like a thief in the night, right? You don't know when he's coming. How about there's another parable? That was the one I was thinking of, but I thought of this one also. Does anyone know another parable for when he comes back?
Isn't it like in the twinkling of an eye or something?
Yes, that's one, but I'm thinking about a longer one. It's an actual story. How about this? Who are you in relationship to Jesus? Or who is the church in relationship to Jesus? A wife, right? Do you remember the parable about the brides waiting for the groom?
We're all dressed up and ready.
They're all dressed up and ready, and what else do they have? In their hand, it's dark out. Nope, a lamp, flashlight, but a lamp, all right? And then it had a wick, and there was oil in it, all right? And they had to make sure they had enough oil because they didn't know when the bridegroom was coming. They were waiting. And then there were some brides that didn't have enough to make it through the night, and then they were frantic when they heard shouting that the bridegroom was coming, that they weren't ready. So Peter is saying, you need to be ready, because we don't know when Jesus is coming back. You need to be ready with how you're feeding
your spiritual guy,
with how you're living your life. And have you ever had this happen at your house? Have you ever had all of a sudden a surprise guest is coming over that day that you didn't know was coming over? And suddenly your mom is like, hurry up, pick that up. You vacuum. You got to clean this up. All this stuff's got to be ready. Or, you know, it's a sudden like panic of, oh my gosh, they caught us unawares. They're going to think that we're dirty kind of thing, right? I mean, everyone's had that moment. Sometimes there are times where you're like, I don't even care. But sometimes with the right person, you're like, oh. Oh no, we gotta hurry up and get things together. We gotta make it look like we have our stuff together. And essentially what happened was you were caught unprepared. And Peter says you've got to stay sober or watching and be ready. Another example of that, just because it's interesting, I think it draws a different kind of parallel, because that one is you are caught unaware and is a little less serious. It's kind of funny, but this one is a little bit more serious. While I was in the military, we used to do training where you would go out for weeks or months and live outside in your tents or big tents, little tents out there, or in your truck. And sometimes you would build what was called a forward operating base. And that would be where you'd set up barbed wire perimeter around the whole thing. You'd have these vehicles where this kind of like a camper, but for army type, that would expand out. And that'd be where you'd have all your computers and do all your planning and everything in it. But you would set up this base and you'd have all your tents lined up. This is an overhead view. Then you might have, you know, your vehicles parked in there and stuff. And then you have barbed wire all the way around the outside. And then you have an entrance. And usually you have like a serpentine path. So then any vehicles coming in have to drive slowly to get in, so you can determine if they're friendly or not before they get to you. It's all secure. But sometimes the enemy comes on the outside and they're out there and they're just causing annoyances. You know, they're firing off little shots just to kind of see where you're at, see if you're awake and stuff. And what the army has is they have what they call a QRF. That is a quick reaction force. So every once in a while you get put on this duty. It's a duty that you're like, I have that duty, but if something happens, it'll be awesome. So what this is imagine kind of like SWAT, but in the army. So what you have to do is you'll have this duty for like 4 or 8 hours or something like that. What you do is you get on all your gear. You get on your body armor, your helmet, you get your night vision set up if it's at night. You have your gun, you have, you know, whatever gear you need to go out and fight, you have ready to go. You take your vehicle, you do all your checks on your vehicle, make sure it's got oil, it's fueled up, it runs, that your Blue Force tracker, which is like your GPS, is working so you can see where everybody is on the battlefield. And you're all set up and ready to go. Everything but in the truck going out the door. And then you all sit in this one tent, usually in rows across from each other, ready to go. And you have your weapon in what is called they just call it green, amber, or red. So you have your weapon at red. And green means that you have your ammunition in your magazines, and your magazines are on you somewhere. Amber means you have a magazine in your weapon, but you haven't charged it, your firing pin isn't set yet. You don't have a bullet in the chamber, like in the barrel. Red means you have a bullet in the barrel, you're all charged up, all you have to do is flick it off, safety, onto fire, and you're ready to go. So you're all sitting in there on red. And you don't get to do that inside the base. You only get to do that outside the wire, unless you're on QRF. You're over there, you're sitting in this one tent, all your vehicles are lined up, ready to go, and all you do is you wait for someone to say, all right, we need the QRF to go out there and take care of that enemy, or go take care of this, or go, we saw someone out there, you guys got to go out there and get them. And when it's go, you're like, boom, 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 boom. You just roll out there and you go get them. And that's kind of what Peter is saying. You have to be like this QRF. With your spiritual life, it's ready to go. You're ready at a moment's notice for Jesus to come back. And it's go time. Says you gotta be ready like that. And here's the thing. QRF, sometimes it's like 3 in the morning. Somebody woke you up at midnight because it was your turn at midnight and you had to get ready and dressed in the dark. And you're really tired because during that whole day, it wasn't like you were sleeping during the day, but you were doing other stuff. And then after you rush, you sit down and you're nice and warm because you have all your gear on and your body, and you're like, you get sleepy. There's nothing to do but just to wait at that point. And Peter is saying, you got to stay awake. You don't be caught sleeping. All right. So let's turn to two places. Luke chapter 9 and Matthew 26. So if Jason through Evan can go to Luke 9 and then the rest of you over here go to Matthew 26. And so I was thinking about this and I thought, well, what? This seems really important to Peter. Why is this important? Why does he write about this? And what really pounded this into Peter's head? Because remember, Peter's not somebody who quickly learns things. He takes a long time to really grasp something, it seems. But something pounded this into his head. So let's first read Luke chapter 9, verses 28 through 32. And this is on the Mount of Transfiguration, where Jesus has taken Peter and John and James separately up onto a mountain to pray with him. Okay? Let's start with verse 28.
And it came to pass about 8 days after these sayings, he took Peter and John and James and went up into a mountain to pray.
And as he prayed, the fashion of his countenance was altered, and his raiment was white and glistening.
And behold, two men walked with him, who were Moses and Elijah,
who appeared in glory and spake of his decease, which he should accomplish at Jerusalem.
But Peter and they that were within him were heavy with sleep, and when they were awake, they saw his glory, and the two men that stood with him.
Okay. Now you guys can read verse 38 through 44 of Matthew 26. And this is at Gethsemane now, after the Last Supper. And so it's about, I think it's probably about midnight, okay?
Jesus said unto him, Verily I say unto thee, that this night before the cock crow.
Hold on. Are you 26, verse 38?
Then saith he unto them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here, and watch with me.
And he went a little further, and fell on his face, and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt.
Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. Could you men not keep watch with me for 1 hour? He asked Peter.
Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak.
He went away again the second time and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, then I will be done.
And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy.
So he left them and went away once more and prayed the third time, saying the same thing.
Then cometh he to his disciples and saith unto them, Sleep on now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed under the hands of sinners.
Okay. So, what happened in both these stories?
Fell asleep.
Right.
Crucial moments.
At crucial moments, right? Peter fell asleep. He missed out the first time. And he failed the second time. Jesus asked him and James and John to pray with him because he needed it. It was a time where he needed it, and he knew they needed it too, because what does Peter do that night? He betrays him. He denies him 3 times. So he knew. He even told them beforehand at the supper that Satan desires to sift you like wheat. So twice Peter missed out. And believe me, I am positive that I would have also fallen asleep in both situations. Not just because I think that anybody would have done the same thing, but I know that me specifically would have done that because I can fall asleep anywhere. And it's easy for me to do. And especially, I'm sure that you were very busy following Jesus. I'm sure that it was like just draining physically sometimes, but like really draining mentally being with Jesus and spiritually. Well, maybe not spiritually, but definitely mentally, because you're trying to figure out what he's saying, and he's just so far beyond you. So Peter is just probably tired all the time. And he's used to working hard. He's a fisherman. Works on the water. That's like some of the hardest work. But he falls asleep in both of these times. So I think, though, that Peter, not that those things were exactly what he's talking about now, but he understands what it's like when you're not ready, when you fail and you fall asleep and you are caught by Jesus asleep. And he's saying, not that it matters if you're caught sleeping when Jesus comes back the second time, because we have to sleep sometime. But he means, I don't want you asleep spiritually when Jesus comes back. I don't want that to be a week that you slacked off, or a month, or a year, whatever. He's like, I would much rather it be that was one of the most intense times that you had of your experiences with God. So don't be caught sleeping in your spiritual life. So he really understands that gravity of the situation. And specifically there, going back to Peter chapter 4, specifically there he says to watch unto prayer. Because prayer is your connection to God. It's your connection to Jesus. And it's your greatest spiritual weapon that you have to grow yourself. And really, if you want to defeat your lusts and want to be ready for the Lord, you need to be in prayer. You have to do it as often as you can. And it's not an easy thing to do. I think everybody struggles with it. At least it seems like everybody I've met struggles with it. So let's see what he has to say now. Let's go on. Back to chapter 4, 1 Peter, and verses 8 through 10 now. Go ahead, Jed.
And above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves, for charity shall cover the multitude of sins.
Use hospitality one to another without. Each one should use whatever gift he has received to serve others faithfully, administering God's grace in its various forms.
If any man speak, let him speak as the oracles of God. If any man minister, let him do it as of the ability which God giveth, that God in all things may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom be praise and dominion forever and ever. Amen.
Okay, so he says that you should have fervent charity. What does fervent mean? What do you think the root word of fervent is? Or what's another word that they share the same thing? Huh?
Ferocious. So like,
that's another good way to say it.
Intense charity.
Yes. How about maybe fever? Out of that.
Intense.
Hot, right? So intense, you should have just burning love for one another. That's usually in the Bible is another word for love. It doesn't mean giving out money to the poor, but it means love for one another, like a brotherly love, Okay? So he says, that's how you should feel for one another. Why does he say that? It says it right there in the verse. What does it do, having love, charity for one another?
It covers a multitude of sins.
Covers a multitude of sins. He's basically saying love, remember, and Levi talked about with you last week that love is a choice and it's not a ooey-gooey feeling that you have, but love as a choice can mend a lot of things. It can fix a lot of things in a relationship if, like that sheep, you bend down, and even when somebody might not be the nicest to you, even though you know that you love each other, whether it's a friend or whoever, a sibling, that you are just humble and you don't lash out back at them, but you show love to them. And a lot of times that'll cause them to see things differently. Might not be right away. Sometimes it might take years for it to happen. But love can mend a lot of wounds. Okay, so then he says to use hospitality. What do you think he means by hospitality? What does that say to you?
Being kind.
Kind, that's good.
Kind and giving.
Generosity, yep, that's part of it. And friendly, okay? So use hospitality. And he has a little caveat there to it, a little added thing that you have to do when you show hospitality. What is that?
Without grudging.
Okay, what do you think that means? Exactly. In another translation, I like the way they put it. It said, use hospitality without secretly wishing that you didn't have to. Right? That's a good way to put it. It really hits you like, oh yeah, I do that sometimes. But that's really hard to do. That's hard to be nice to somebody that you know you should be nice to and you don't really want to. And a lot of times, that's easier to do when you're at church or you're at youth group. But then when you get away from other people with the same mindset, it gets a lot harder the farther that you get away and on other situations that you forget how you should act. It's a hard thing to do. And it's hard, but Peter says it is good because your flesh is saying no. That your flesh doesn't like it. Says, no, I'd rather hold a grudge. But Peter says, you're going to have to suffer in the flesh if you want to grow in your spirit. All right. So here we go again with the trials and trials being good for you. And he's going to talk about this again in verses 12 through 16. And I'll just read them quick. Beloved, think it not strange concerning that the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened unto you. But rejoice inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. If ye be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye, for the Spirit of glory and of God resteth upon you. On their part, he is evil spoken of, but on your part, he is glorified. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's matters. Yet if any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on his behalf. So, we've got the idea, I think, set in stone for us now that trials are going to make you stronger in your relationship with God. It's going to make you a better person. I hate that phrase, but it's going to make you a better person, okay? And he says that's all going to be counted to God as glory when you suffer those things. He says, but what I don't want you to suffer is I don't want you to suffer as a murderer. He says, because if you suffer as a murderer, you deserve that suffering. That's not going to be counted as glory. That's what you deserve. Then he says, I don't want you to suffer as a thief. Okay, got it. Not going to murder someone, not going to steal. Pretty straightforward. But then he says, I don't want you to suffer as a busybody. So Peter puts being a busybody up there with a murderer and a thief. In other people's business, right? Messing around, you know, always worried about what someone else is doing, concerned with who said what to who, and did you hear what they did, kind of thing. And
on a daily basis, you're more likely to encounter a busybody than you are a murderer.
Yes. But but here's why Peter puts it in there, okay? Because he was guilty of it at one point. He knows how bad of a thing it can be, and that's why he puts it in here. So I'm just going to turn, well, I'm not going to turn there because I think it's familiar enough and I can tell you about it. But when Jesus, after Jesus comes back, from the dead, after he's resurrected, and he goes and he meets with the disciples in the upper room, and then he's around there for a few weeks afterwards, and then they don't see him for a while as the resurrected Christ. And Peter says, we don't know what to do, let's go fishing. So they go out and they go fishing. And as they're fishing, they fish all night, they don't catch anything. Some guy's walking on the beach that they can't see very far. He's very far away. He says, hey, throw the net on the other side. They throw it on the other side, and up it comes with just filled with fish like it did before. So much that the net's about to break. And John, who was Jesus's one of his favorites, says to Peter, it's Jesus. That's who's on the shore. And Peter takes off his clothes and dives into the water and swims ashore. He can't wait for the boat to get there. Typical impetuous Peter, right? Got to get there. And when they all finally get there, they have a meal. They have breakfast with Jesus on the beach. It's a very just easy going. Just those disciples must have been really nice just to sit down and relax after the craziness of his death and his resurrection, and just everything is crazy, and they're just relaxed there on the beach. And Jesus asks Peter, he says, do you love me? And Jesus says, and Peter says, you know I love you. And Jesus asks him this three times, and each time Peter says, you know I love you, and each time after he says, you know I love you, Jesus says, well then feed my sheep. Of course, he's talking about the people, all of his people that follow him. And the third time, it really hits Peter in the heart. It says it grieved him, made him sad when Jesus said the third time, do you love me? Why?
Because it took him three times to realize that he
loved me. Realize what?
It took him three times to realize that he was betraying
me. Yes. Because it was three times, and that three times correlated to the three times that he said he didn't know Jesus. How do you not know someone that you love? So that really hurt Peter when Jesus said it the third time. It was like Jesus saying, remember that thing you did? Kinda. But Jesus wasn't saying that, okay? Not in that way. And then Peter, Jesus tells him in not so many words that Peter's going to have a terrible death, which according to tradition, he does. He's crucified upside down by his choosing not to be crucified the same way Jesus was. And then Peter, after he finds out that he's going to have a terrible time and suffer a lot, he gets a little nosy, becomes a little bit of a busybody, and he says, hey, what about him? And he's talking about John, the one that the other favorite of Jesus. And Jesus says, you don't have to worry about him. Basically, you mind your own business. It's not for you to know. And I think that Peter and John probably had a little bit of strife between them for a long time before this. I think that there was probably a bit of jealousy on Peter's side for quite a while, because John was always the one who was closest to Jesus. At the Last Supper, John got to lay on the good side of Jesus and rest his head up against Jesus' chest, and Peter was on the other side. And I think that kind of thing bothered Peter a little bit. And it shouldn't have. But Peter didn't for a long time while Jesus was on earth, and even afterwards, even after they saw him resurrected in the upper room, he still didn't get it yet. He didn't get what being on earth and just being what the whole point of life and existing was yet. He still didn't get it. Because Jesus, he didn't understand when Jesus said that the kingdom wasn't of this world, but that the kingdom was here, that it already arrived. He didn't get what that meant. But Jesus was talking about that the kingdom is your spirit. It's a spiritual kingdom. And that it's already here. And you can already be a part of it. And he didn't get that yet. But I think after that time on the beach there, that last time together, I think it finally hit home of what everything was about. Of what he needed to do. That all that suffering was okay. That suffering was all right. As long as he had his relationship with Jesus. As long as it was just focused on him in Christ and not everybody else around him. So, that's what Peter has to say then about a spiritual walk, about a spiritual life. And he's just trying to pass on to give you a little bit more insight onto how it works and how to some guidance on living your life. All right, thank you.